Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, you're welcome, Max. So later on this hour, we'll hear from Luke Allen, 19-year-old, making waves in the world of motor racing. He's going to join us around 8:30 or so. Dan McDonnell after 9 on the football show talking about World Cup 2030. And Mark Lawrenson is going to join us as well and pay tribute to Ian St. John. First, though, GAA Congress was on virtually over the weekend. 8 motions put forward, 8 motions passed. Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent is with us. Evening, Colm.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very well. For a long time around Congress, we would all make the point that the GAA sure moves slowly. I think in the last couple of years, that's no longer true. The changes over the last 4 or 5 years in GAA have been seismic. I mean, akin to like 20 years worth of a certain era.
Yeah, I probably, you go back to the 2016 Congress, perhaps, and there was a motion that weekend to trim 2 weeks off the All-Ireland hurling and football finals to just to try and strip it back and allow more time at the back end of the year. And it failed. It didn't get the 2/3 majority, fell at around 60%. And at the same Congress, a move to open up all grounds, let's say Páirc Uí Chaoimh, all the intercounty grounds to other sports, rugby and soccer, to allow Central Council that facility to open up to those sports as per Croke Park. That was also defeated that day. If you move forward 5 years to now, that rule regarding the other stadia was passed 2 years ago in the wake of the Liam Miller controversy down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And last weekend, the split season came in, which not only takes 2 weeks off the traditional September dates in the All-Ireland finals, it actually takes 9 and 8 weeks respectively to bring them back to what's known on the calendar as week 29. If it was this year, it would be July 17, July 18. So now the All-Ireland final will be played 9 weeks, the football final 9 weeks earlier than when it was 5 years ago. And the hurling final will be played 8 weeks earlier than where it was. So if you just take those two particular changes, and coupled with that is that there wasn't a dissenting voice to either. Not either. Both were passed in, obviously, 2 years ago and last weekend with what's the split season, effectively categorising two distinct windows for intercounty at the front, at the start of the year, and club at the back. They came in without dissenting voices. So that's the level of change just in those two motions. Mm. It probably doesn't even factor in the change from minor to under 17, from under 18 to under 17, from minor grade, which separates minor footballers, hurlers can no longer play adult. That's a seismic, huge change as well. So the level of change in that regard, in terms of the calendar and with the permission for the stadium, that, you're right, it has been quite a 4 to 5 years in terms of change, and perhaps more to come with a championship structure change later in the year.
Why do you think this sudden burst of change the last couple of years?
Well, you know, I did a piece today, Joe, on the change in terms of the fixtures, and you know, the old phrase, when the apple is ripe, it'll fall from the tree. There is always a process, almost a resistance that has to be registered before any change is made, almost with any rule. But I think the realization that there is a better way, and obviously in terms of the calendar, well, there was a dawning last July that you know, you had county players going out and playing challenge matches in the build up to a championship in counties with no overlap with intercounty, and that really sat well with players, administrators, everybody. And I think the GAA strengthened the rules, or strengthened the penalties, certainly around breaches of training, and that helped too. So that sort of warned off intercounty managers for a period anyway, to leave the players alone. And they got on with it at the height of the summer. And I suppose the realization that there is potentially a better way here. And if we do create two distinct windows, we can take out a lot of the trouble. And I think the phrase fixtures row will recede a lot in the coming years, because those overlaps, those Venn diagrams between all the various factions, shall we call them, are they're disappearing. And there are blocks now being identified. And, you know, if they can find a suitable place for the college competitions earlier in the year and give them their space and the players the freedom to go and play with that before they move on to a league, or maybe it'll be a provincial championship if they turn the season around, you will see some uniformity and you will see a lot less stress points, I would imagine, because of this. Now, obviously, counties will have to go and change their championship structures to align with the new reality. But it does mean big change all round. Even for club players, will not be going back as early in January and February and starting out on that road as early, because competitions will be starting, the main competition will be starting in most cases a little later. So yes, definitely winds of change have really gusted hard across the GAA landscape over the last 4 years. And that's notwithstanding the changes in championship structures already with the hurling round robin and the Super 8. So like 38 motions were put before Congress last weekend, and all 38 were carried. I mean, that's...
Oh, 38. Sorry,
that's a fair indication.
I read it as 8. 38 and all 38 carried, right,
38
okay.
Motions were passed. Now, look, some of them were box-ticking. Some of them are just, you know, rules advisory, stressing that this has to be phrased in a certain way. And those carry. But all the what we would call the big-ticket ones, they all passed.
Yeah.
The split season, the motions around cynicism in hurling and football, which were looking quite rocky at one stage. And the president, the outgoing president, John Horn, who would have been supportive of him, called a vote after listening to quite extensive debate and good debate about it. He says, I'm going to go with this vote because, you know, the move was to push it on to a special Congress later in the year when there could be face-to-face debate. But the debate was quite... It was quite thorough, so he weighed it up and decided, I'm going to allow a vote here, and it got 60%. All it needed was 50, because it's only a trial for this year's intercounty competitions. Mm. So it got through. Now, there will be ambiguity about this rule. There is no doubt that it does create an extra layer of decision-making for referees. But in principle, the idea that rulemakers would draft a rule and that Congress would go and back it to try and make some inroads in against cynicism, particularly in hurling, but also to add another penalty in football by adding a penalty for a particular foul in a particular area, is progressive to try and deal with, because it has been creeping in. And I think those who were voting on it would have realised that last year's hurling championship was really riddled with cynicism.
Yes. Well, there was a quote, and it was a 55-minute debate. There was a quote from the Tipperary chairman, John Costigan, and he said, if the level of cynicism we saw creeping into the game of hurling over the past championship was to continue for another 12 months, I shudder to think where the situation would be if we don't address it. So, in effect, this motion 20, passing by 61% to 39%, despite several delegates, it must be said, calling for the motion to be delayed until special Congress later in the year when it could be debated in person. In effect, this is going to mean... if there's a foul, obviously around the penalty area, all the way out to the 21 and including the D, a penalty can be given and there will be a sin bin now.
Yeah, so it's a little bit confusing, but I'll try and explain it as best I know. There are three types of fouls that they've categorised here: careless use of the hurl, a trip or a pull down. If any of those happen in the arc, which is just outside the 20-metre line, or inside the 20-metre line, and a referee deems that to be a clear goal-scoring opportunity, and a clear goal-scoring opportunity would have followed on had the foul not occurred, then it would be a penalty, and the player who has committed the foul will be sent off for under yellow card for 10 minutes, sin bin. A black card will still apply everywhere on the field for that type of foul, and obviously there's a... body checking as well, body collide as it's known. If that happens anywhere on the field, the black card in football will still apply. Now, you could cynically trip someone down inside in a hurling game. You could trip someone or pull them down inside the 20-metre line. But if it's not a clear goal-scoring opportunity, then there's no penalty and there's no sin bin. It's only when there's a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Mm. So it's black card light, very, very light. It's a small step in the right direction for this It will serve as a deterrent for sure for some of the instances that we did see last year, but it is going to create some level of ambiguity. There's no doubt about that. There will be discussions as, you know, if it evolves over the summer or whenever the championship is going to be, there will be a lot of discussion about what's a clear goal scoring opportunity.
Well, and
they did set out some criteria. And if defenders are within the vicinity and the referee can determine, well, there was a good chance that a defender could have got across and at least made a tackle there. Yeah. I think they'll proceed cautiously with this. It's a deterrent. It's like putting up a speed camera on a road. And, you know, it may not always be operable. It's there that to guard against this. It may not always be effective in its current guise. Now, you might say, well, why should you bring in a rule like that when it's not exact and it's not precise? And enough people have said that. But, you know, the principle of dealing with this, having lost the black card argument last year, the committee in charge, the rules committee, came back with this. And it is a watered-down version of the black card, but it is specific. And it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so as well, personally. I know Michael Verney was very good and very interesting on OTBAM this morning. Your colleague, obviously, with the lads, he felt it, the nuclear button had been pushed here. He felt this is a bit rushed and it's a big decision to make and it's going to fundamentally change the game. So there is that argument out there for sure. So just to clarify, did you say, is there a black card in hurling if there's a cynical drag down out the field?
It's a yellow card because the black card was so it was beaten so much last year.
Yeah.
It remains a black card and the rules remain the same with regard to black cards in football.
In football, it stays.
It's only if a cynical foul happens within the arc or the 20-metre line that a penalty will be given and the black card will follow. In hurling, it'll be a yellow card. But only in hurling inside the air, only in hurling will that yellow card, will that sin bin apply for this particular foul inside the arc or the 20 meter line.
But there's no sin. There's no sin bin in football.
Well, there is. The black card will be a sin bin. Will remain.
Sin bin.
That remains. The black card, you will be sin bin for a cynical foul anywhere on the field in football.
Yeah.
But in hurling, it's only within the 20 meter line. Or inside the arc. So look, there is going to be ambiguity here, and you know refs have a lot to weigh up, and there's been a lot added to their workload in recent years. If you consider that lines on a field, they now have to weigh up three distinct areas in the field. For the offensive mark, they have to weigh up, well, was it inside the 45 meter, or was it inside or outside the 45 meter line, and did it travel 20 meters? For the midfield mark, shall we call it? You must be between the two 45s, or you must be over the 45 to for the mark to register. And now there's more distinct areas with the 20-metre line in the arc to detect a cynical foul and see is there a clear goal-scoring opportunity. So there really is a lot to weigh up for referees here. But in principle, it goes back to the principle of the matter. Are the GAA serious about cutting down and penalising cynical fouls further? It's a step in the right direction, albeit it could be a tricky step.
Yeah, okay. I do think the sin bin is a better move than the days of your match is over, you're done. It just felt a lot. You know, amateur players, they might get 1 to 2 championship matches in their summer, you know, potentially, and just have the game ended just seemed like a bit much. I think sin bin 10 minutes is enough of a blow to everybody to be a deterrent, if that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. I think on balance, it was a better way, and the evidence is there. Certainly in football and last year's league, the evidence was there that you were twice as likely to score in that 10-minute period. Now it did lead to the disadvantage or the numerically disadvantaged team probably did try to slow down the game and use the keeper as a back pass outlet quite a bit. But by and large, a player was able to get back on, and you're right, we saw players being black carded early in All-Ireland finals, Johnny Cooper, Lee Keegan, and you just wonder, you know, was that penalty too excessive in that respect? And you know, I think on balance it was, and this is a better way. This is a better way, and you know, there is evidence to say that teams will score more when there's a one less player on the field. Obviously, with the likes of Dublin, they can override that, and did in this year's All-Ireland final quite comfortably. When Robbie McDade was sent off, so I think I think it in tight games, it will make a difference for a player to be off the field for those 10 minutes.
Yeah, deterrent as opposed to punishment maybe is better. Something I want to ask you about, so I don't know, do you put on the coffee and sit through like a gazillion hours of this and watch every minute of it? So if you didn't catch this, don't worry about it. But I did read on the Sunday of an exchange between Michael Deignan and John Horan. Michael Deignan, obviously now a chair of the Offaly County Board, and he was talking about the Dublin situation. And he insisted he wasn't attacking Dublin. He said, this is not an anti-Dublin thing. I have huge regard for the Dublin team. But I think this whole discussion, I won't say has been swept under the carpet, but times have changed. Dublin received support when they needed it, and I think other counties do as well now. And John Horan reacted to that, didn't think much of that. And I think there was a confusion then over some of the figures that had been incorrect, and it was all a little bit messy. So you probably have a better understanding or grasp of what happened than I do, but this is what I understand to have happened. So the Dubs' dominance was being debated, was it? Or how does something like this come up?
It was around a discussion on the Director General's report, and Michael Deignan raised an issue. Now, as it happened, he quoted a set of figures that were in the initial document that was sent out, but there was an error in that document in terms of where the columns and where the information, there was an overlay error, it was described as, and an updated document came out the following day. Now, initially, in the first document, it was portrayed that Dublin got an awful lot more than everybody else in terms of all their operating grants and their travel, their player expenses or the support for the team for the inter-county season. I just don't have those figures to hand.
Fine.
But when it was corrected, it brought it back down to, you know, more acceptable levels, shall we say.
Okay.
And that point was raised by Dublin, actually, and John Horan. But Michael's point was, again, probably based on principle, and he acknowledged, obviously, he had quoted the wrong set of figures. He was just a day out. That correction came by email to, say, came to the media. I know that anyway. I got it, and it corrected it. But actually, he's probably referring to the level of subvention that Dublin get from the GAA, and they actually, as a percentage of the overall coaching and games development spend, they actually got more this year, in the order of 20 or 24%, depending what way you calculate it, but from a position last year where it was 12. So they got an increase of 8%, even though everybody got less. Dublin's went up. Now, don't know how that happened or why it happened. I'm not sure. But Michael's point is valid, and we've discussed it here.
No, at length
in this forum before.
This is going to. Sorry to interrupt, Colin. So I get my head around this right, because this obviously has been a bone of contention for a long time, and you know, Tom Ryan, I think, has been on the record as saying that they're going to level things up in terms of finances. So last year it emerged that the Dubs got more. They had like a percentage increase.
I think it was around 745,000 out of 3.7 or 8 million that was distributed under the coaching and games development banner. So that actually increased their percentage in the order of 8%, something like that. They got 8% more in terms of the overall distributions than they had got in 2019.
So how did that go down with everyone?
It wasn't mentioned. I mean, obviously Dublin took it up, the fact that Michael had quoted the wrong set of figures, and John Horan also, you know, pointed out that, and this is true under his term as Leinster chairman, when the East Leinster project was being set up, that would have supported extra coaches in Meath, Kildare, Louth and Wicklow. Let's say the other side of the M50, where the populations are obviously increasing on that side of the M50 too.
Yeah.
200,000 was taken off Dublin at that point and redistributed to those four counties to support many, many more coaches. And there are 19 coaches, for example, in Meath, and there's 60-odd, whatever it is, in Dublin. But I suppose Michael's point was that Dublin, there's a self-sufficiency in Dublin. They were able to generate in a COVID year 1.4 million in commercial revenue. If you look at the fundraising column in their accounts, Dublin County Board didn't record a fundraising return for 2020. So, you know, you have counties all over the country who are selling houses. They're going on Leitrim, walked 50 miles in January and raised 100,000, and you've golf classics and you've race days and you've everything like that, and they look at the Dublin column and the fundraising, and this year was nothing. Last year was 88,000 okay, they have a very, their model is commercial and they leave the fundraising to the clubs and all that, but you would think there is more in them that maybe they would be able to say, well, you know, we maybe don't need as much here, and maybe it is time for a redistribution. Our clubs are probably strong enough to, some of our clubs, not all, you know, there's no doubt there's a lot of areas where the penetration for Gaelic games in Dublin City isn't great, and that's accepted, but there are some super clubs there who are able to cover the cost of a couple of extra GPOs and games administrators, and that is probably what Michael was referring to, that the rest need help, and they surely do. And this idea that, well, let's generate more money for the rest and keep Dublin at what it is, the money's not really going to be there over the next few years. That's pretty obvious. There are gaping holes there. And I think by any metric, whether it's per population or per head of registered player or per member, you will find that Dublin get considerably more than almost everyone else. Antrim looks to me like Antrim are well off because they have a Gaelfest program that aims to do much the same thing that the GA set about doing in Dublin in 2004. So really, there is some more correction. Maybe not as much as others would be calling out for. The coaches and games development still needs to be supported well in Dublin.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, they are a very strong self-generating county, and that's recognised in their accounts every year by comparison to almost every other county.
Before you go, about 2 minutes here, a new GA president, Larry McCarthy. So yeah. I know he's involved, obviously, at Congress over the weekend. What's going to be the, you know, headline aim of his tenure? What's he all about over the next couple of years?
Well, I think what we've just discussed is something that he will surely address. I think urbanisation, that whole migration to the east and rural depopulation is something that's going to come up and come up fast. And I think what we've just discussed there over the last 5 minutes is certainly one thing. I think a lot of the heavy lifting has been done by the previous president in terms of reform around obviously the season, and reform around, there's a talent academy document that seeks to deal with elitism at underage level, and it's a very progressive document. If that's followed up on, I would have thought that was launched at the end of 2019, and some work has been done on it, but it certainly does rebalance things. I think there'll be infrastructure issues down the line. There's a lot of projects have been held up because of the finance. Larry McCarthy's whole mantra the last day was just get back on the field. That's the biggest challenge. And surely it is. But I think policy-wise, he was a member of the Towards 2034 committee that met during Éagán O'Farrell's presidency. And they came up with some far-reaching and radical proposals, actually. But that document still sits gathering dust on a shelf in Croke Park. It never saw the light of day. It's been there since January 2018, just before Éagán O'Farrell left office. It was never published. At the time, the GAA says, well, we're under no obligation to publish any document. But one of the pillars of that document was that they would pay an allowance. By 2034, they would pay an allowance to inter-county GAA players to recognise their effort instead of expenses. And that was really a standout. Also, abolish provincial councils and abolish provincial championships. So that was the other big ticket item in that too. And they're quite far-reaching. But as I said, that document lies in Croke Park. It hasn't been officially launched or published. And Larry McCarthy was a member of that group. And he was asked last weekend, well, you know, will you revisit it? He said, I've forgotten. It's 3 years exactly what's in it. But he said, logically, I will look back at it. He may look back at it and say, two of the things actually that were in it were the split season and open up the grounds, where we started this conversation, open up all grounds. And actually, being as the changes happened that quick, that those two have already happened. So it may be a case that they look at and say, well, we don't really need to do much more here. But there was many, many more recommendations. And it was a discussion paper as much as anything else. Okay. And that's something he probably will revisit. So infrastructure, the issue of coaching and games development, and the financial model for payments to counties are things that I do think will fall on his watch.
Okay, very good. Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent. Thanks, Colm.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
The OTB Podcast Network.